Welcome to another episode of Pro Wrestling for Life, everyone. I'm your host, two-time WWE Hall of Famer, X-Pac. Also joining me right now is my co-host, Nick Houseman from Wrestling Inc. Hello, Nick.
Hi, Sean. Very good to see you, man. I'm so stoked about the show today because we always get to record this after we've done all the segments that are going to be on the show. And I know what people are in for today, and I'm really excited to let this one out onto the world, man.
Yeah. It turned out to be a nice little mixed bag of treats.
Little potpourri here. Yeah, for sure. There's some delicious little yummy snacks to chew on here. Yeah, man. So today on the show, and just a little bit after we talk some news here at the top, you're going to hear Sean and I's conversation with 20-year WWE veteran referee Jimmy Corderas in the house here today. Love this conversation. Also later on, you're going to hear from Cultaholics Tom Campbell, who's going to be talking to Sean about his WWF championship match against The Rock from the 1998 WWF Capital Carnage pay-per-view, which a lot of fans in the States, you know, which we kind of get in there when you guys start talking, may not know as much about as much as it was made a really big deal over in the UK, what you guys did there in 98, you know?
Yeah. It was a fun talk.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it. Yeah. It took a few little turns and got back on track, but you know, that's how I do it.
That's fine. It's a good one. And then we're going to wrap the show up. We got my latest game show with Sean, and as a special treat, the cherry on the top of the sundae here today, the one and only Giancarlo Didimo is going to be taking on Sean Waltman in the latest game. Of course, a lot of fans know Giancarlo from his work at GCW, but he also worked at WWE. He did the Liv Morgan doc. He did the Tom McGee doc. Very buzzy. He's only been on the market for 2 weeks. We're going to talk to him just a little bit about what's going on in his life right now, and then we're going to play some games. So a real variety here today, Sean.
I was under the assumption, I don't know why, that it was pronounced Didimo. It's Didimo, huh?
I think it's, I didn't ask him, and I'm pretty sure I said it in the interview.
You're probably right.
Giancarlo took me forever, to be fair, to get right. Like, I got his name wrong for a long time, but I got to put some respect on that name. So I know at least his first name correctly, you know? So,
yeah, I think you're right.
Thank you. Appreciate that. And hey, before we get into the news here, I just want to let everybody know, if you go to the Pro Wrestling for Life Pro Wrestling Tee store right now, we have a brand new sapphire blue shirt. It is Lightning Kid ACD inspired Pro Wrestling for Life shirt. This thing looks dope. You're going to have one soon. I'm going to have one. Marsh is going to have one. And you should go get one too. Beautiful shirt of all the podcast shirts I've ever done. I think this is my absolute favorite. So I would definitely recommend you go check that out. And then over on the Patreon this week, not only do you get the ad-free version of the show early, so thank you for everyone who is a Patreon and, you know, watching us right now a day early, you're also going to get a watch-along that Sean and I are going to do, watching back Six versus Eddie Guerrero, the ladder match from WCW sold out. And Jimmy Corderas stuck around for a little bit longer. The editor for the show, the guy who's watching this right now, putting it together, Marsh, Ref Marsh, he's an indie ref. We gave him 10, 15 minutes to pick Jimmy's brain about the art of refereeing. So you can check all that over on the Patreon, and we got a new shirt as well. All right. News you can use, news to leave a bruise. Sean, it was a big week for wrestling news. I'm not kidding you when I say Wrestling Inc. did more traffic this week than I have seen in months. And what happened was, out of nowhere, WWE decided to release Braun Strowman, Aleister Black, Lana, Ruby Riott, Buddy Murphy, and Santana Garrett. What's your reaction to WWE letting all these big name talents onto the market all at once?
Well, I mean, some of them are bigger name than others.
Sure, fair. Who would you say is the biggest name of that?
I think Braun Strowman. He was the champion. He was in like one of the main events at WrestleMania last year.
Sure, yeah, 100%.
It's a surprise, but it's not a shock. It's not a shock. Nothing like that shocks me when it comes to them.
Yeah.
You know, people are you know, speculating as to why and that, but, a lot of people are talking. That's for sure. You're wondering why.
Yeah, well, the why. Yeah, well, before we get to some, I want to pick your brain a little bit about a couple of these talents and where you could see them maybe going. But the why, like, there's a lot of people that say the why is because WWE could be sold outright by Vince and the company right now to somebody else. This is a chance for them to kind of, you know, strip away some of the finances to make it more appealing to somebody who could possibly buy the company. Do you think that Vince would ever sell WWE in his lifetime?
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. I don't know that he's ready to do so yet.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, eventually I think, yeah, you know, like might want to cash out. I mean, there could be like, you know, I'll sell, but I'll still keep like, you know, some kind of, you know, where he'll still have some say so over the company. I think, I don't know. Didn't something like that happen when AOL bought to Turner Broadcasting? Didn't Ted Turner get still a little bit of
the one for me that I would directly compare would be like the UFC buyout, because UFC got sold right to the agency, the talent agency, and they kept Dana White on, right? Like Dana White not only made a bunch of money from selling the company, but he also got retained as like the president leader, and he's making money on top of that each year for continuing to run the company. I mean, I could see, I guess.
Oh, Dana was part of Semaphore Entertainment. Like that was that group, like Art Davies and them.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. So I could see Vince maybe sticking around if he could be like some kind of figurehead kind of person to keep the day-to-day going on with the company after doing a buyout.
Maybe. Yeah. But I think it's just as likely they're just trying to get the bottom line as best that they can get it looking for, you know, for their shareholders, Nick.
Sure. Yeah. Well, and because, you know, bottom line or not, there's some talents out there right now. And a lot of people wondering, you know, where these people are going to want to go. Not everybody can go to AEW, or can all of these people go to AEW? What are your thoughts on that?
I mean, they can.
Yeah.
They can, I guess, you know. I don't know if AEW wants them all. And it's just, I don't know. You know, the landscape of the industry right now is interesting. Like, I don't know, Nick. Like, Andrade wasn't in this recent list of people released, but like, you know, I just can't imagine Strowman or Aleister Black having a hard time figuring out what they want, you know. I mean, they might have a hard time deciding, but there's plenty of opportunities, I think.
Would you be a fan of watching Lana go be with Miro? Do you think you'd put that, would that be a no brainer to you to put that act together?
Sure. Why not?
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. 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 Yeah, I mean, it's a little different now, right? Cause I mean, he's not the Bulgarian brute like he used to be, like that whole monster. Like, you know, it's just he has a different vibe now.
You know, yeah, well, you look at you. I mean, when you left WWF initially, you know, the 1-2-3 Kid stuff, and got to go be X-Pac over in WCW, you got a chance to give yourself a whole new coat of paint. And that coat of paint kind of that became you. Like, I think that, you know, what we saw with X-Pac when you came back was kind of an extension of what you'd created over there with Six, right?
Yes. Oh, yeah, for sure. This is the same. Yeah. Basically the same. Yeah. This episode is sponsored by Blue Chew. Say it with us. Blue Chew. Blue Chew is making waves and bringing more confidence to the bedroom by offering chewable tablets that can help men get stronger and longer lasting erections.
Oh yeah, Sean. I mean, I you know, I know that every man out there wants to feel very virile, right, in the bedroom there. And, you know, Blue Chew, they offer a unique online service. They deliver the same active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis, but it's in a chewable form, and it's at a fraction of the cost. So that's nice, a chewable form. Much more inexpensive than these other leading brands out there, you know?
Yeah. And Blue Chew's tablets help men achieve hard. Did I already fucking say that?
I think they want us to really emphasize it here, that, you know, the harder, stronger erections that you get, you know?
Right. Yeah. I don't know if you've heard, but like erections on Blue Chew are like blue steel. A cat can't scratch it.
That's so really good. That's good. So yeah, they're at all.
I stole that line from a movie from when I was a kid. Anyways,
I don't want the cat scratching my steel pole, but whatever. To each his own with your Blue Chew. So Blue Chew is an online prescription service. No visits to the doctor's office. No awkward conversations. No waiting in line at the pharmacy. And it ships right to your door in a nice, discreet package. So it doesn't say, Blue Chew, deal with your erectile dysfunction on the
right. Box.
Discreet, you know, discreet.
Yeah. Yeah, the process is simple. Sign up at BlueChew.com. Consult with one of their licensed medical providers. And once you're approved, you'll receive your prescription within days. The best part, it's all done online.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and those licensed medical providers, they're going to work with you to find the right ingredient and the strength for your prescription that you're going to need.
Yeah. The one I like to use, Nick, is the Sildenafil, the one that's like similar to Cialis.
Okay.
Yeah, that's there's two different ones you can get. I just prefer that one.
Okay, so that's great that you actively are using this and you can testify that this is a great product.
Oh yeah, Blue Chew was on board with me for a while back when I was doing X-Pac 1-2-3-60.
Sure, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, and like the thing I like about them too is like they're made in the USA.
Yeah.
They ship direct, so it's cheaper than going to a pharmacy. I mean, it's a lot of great stuff over at Blue Chew. I mean, for pro wrestling fans, you know about Blue Chew, but this is your chance to really try it out. You know what I mean?
That's the thing about Blue Chew, Nick, is they've been so supportive of the wrestling industry and wrestling podcasts. I hope everyone goes out and supports them. And they have been, right? Blue Chew's doing great. I think they're as far as I know, I think they're at the top of their, I'm not going to say the other names of their competitors, but.
Okay. Anyways. They're at the top of the heat. They're at the top, the peak of the erection. They're on the tip of that erection is where that is.
Mm-hmm.
The tip. That's the best part.
And the tip, just the tip.
Yeah, I know. I'm glad that tickled you, Sean.
Hey, so what else do we have here?
Well, that's the thing is, Sean, this isn't just about us saying nice things. The listeners out there, we got a great deal for you when it comes to Blue Chew. So if you want to try Blue Chew free, use the promo code PRO at checkout. You're going to pay $5 shipping, but you're going to get the free Blue Chew. That's BlueChew.com, promo code PRO. You're going to receive the first month free, and that's great. You know, Sean?
Yes. Once again, that's BlueChew.com, promo code PRO, P-R-O, to receive the first month free. And we thank you very much, Blue Chew. Appreciate your support. Growing up, cereal was one of the best parts of being a kid. But I had to give it up because I realized it was full of sugar and junk that you really shouldn't eat.
Yeah, totally. I mean, and Sean, you're a high-level athlete. I mean, I'm sure you, want to enjoy cereal, but, you don't want to put, all that sugar and stuff into your system, right?
Yeah, and, right these days, Nick, I'm really conscious about what I put in my body as far as food and everything. I try to eat, a paleo or kind of a keto-ish type of diet, not super strict, but I'm just really mindful of it. And man, this magic spoon, man, I'm in heaven with this stuff, man.
I know you are. That's the thing is, you told me, because we got this a couple days ago, you told me that you got the magic spoon and then you enjoyed it and then
it
disappeared. Is that what you
told? I literally just a couple minutes ago, I had to go upstairs and get this from where I hid it for my wife. I had to hide because my wife's just like me. She tries to watch what she eats and, similar diet to mine. And I came up and all my magic spoon was gone.
Yeah, dude.
Well, yeah, there was some serious heat in the household over that.
We want to tell our sponsor, great sponsor, Magic Spoon. Yeah, we love the product. It won't ruin your relationship. I don't know if we can say that is a health anecdote, but it shouldn't. I mean, this is really good stuff. I mean, great flavors at 0 grams of sugar, 13 to 14 grams of protein, only 4 net grams of carbs in each serving, and only 140 calories a serving. That's really good, Sean.
For considering how it tastes, dude, it's amazing, Nick.
Yeah.
It's amazing, man. Especially if you haven't had any of this type of stuff in a while, if you're being pretty strict on your diet, and you don't cheat, man, you'll feel like you're cheating when you eat this. Like, honestly, you feel like you're doing something wrong when you eat it. It's that damn good.
Yeah. I mean, and you talk about how good it is for your diet. I mean, a keto friendly, gluten free, grain free, soy free, low carb, GMO free. And what we got, Sean, is what everybody out there right now can try as well. The variety pack. So you get four different flavors. You get cocoa, fruity, frosted, and peanut butter, which is the one I have right now. And I've been munching on before we did this spot. Yes.
My favorite are the fruity ones. They're I'm not going to tell you what brand cereal. I don't want to name, you know, can I name up Fruit Loops?
Sure,
it tastes a lot like Fruit Loops, man.
Okay. Got it.
Made just as good.
Yeah.
Just as good. Yeah.
I 100% agree with you, man. Yeah. And like they told us in the copy here to try to clean the cocoa and the peanut butter together and make like your own kind of like mix cereal.
Did you do it?
Oh, I did it, Sean. And it's really good. It's nice. Just a peanut butter cup, you know?
Nice. And you know, like I don't drink milk anymore. So like I either use like an almond milk or like earlier I used oat milk with it. So and it's amazing. Even with like almond milk, oat milk, cashew, any of that stuff. So yes, man, if you're like, if you don't use dairy, like just throw some coconut milk or almond milk in there with it. It's amazing. Anyone that's listening or watching right now wants to give Magic Spoon a try, I highly recommend it. Highly recommend it. If you do, go to magicspoon.com/pro. That's magicspoon.com/PRO to grab a variety pack and try it today. And be sure to use our promo code PRO, P-R-O, at checkout to save $5 off your order.
Yeah. $5, man. Gone. Yep. Off of it. You get to try it, and it's $5 gone. You don't even need it.
Bro. And Magic Spoon is so confident in their product, it's backed with a 100% happiness guarantee. So if you don't like it for any reason, they'll refund your money. No questions asked.
Man, that's good. That's customer service. I can believe in, Sean.
Yep. And remember, get your next delicious bowl of guilt-free cereal at magicspoon.com/PRO and use the code PRO to save $5 off.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, we want to thank you again, Magic Spoon, for coming on and sponsoring Pro Wrestling for Life.
I love Magic Spoon. Like, this isn't just, hey, it's not just we have a sponsor. Like, I legit love this shit, man. It is so good. I hope everyone gives it a shot. Welcome back to the show, everyone. Joining us right now, a man I've known for decades, a wonderful human being, an excellent referee, ladies and gentlemen, legendary former WWE, WWF referee, Jimmy Corderas. What's up, Jimmy?
Oh, Sean, man, what a great introduction. I hope I can live up to that introduction now. The pressure's on.
it's true, bro. It's true. Oh,
thank
hey,
you.
Man. Hey, so it's been a long time. I know... Everyone, Jimmy and I, we talked a little bit before we started recording. So, like, it's not the very first time I've talked to him, but still, like, I haven't seen Jimmy in forever. Jimmy, how the fuck are you, man?
I'm hanging in there. You know what? Surprisingly feeling good. You know, like I told you before, with this whole situation, I haven't been able to travel anywhere, go anywhere, see anybody. But you know what? I'm very fortunate because when it comes to marriage, I outkicked my coverage and I scored big time. So I'm doing good, man. I'm happy. And what else can you ask for?
Dude, hey, man, I lucked out big time too. Like my wife and I, we got married right before the pandemic hit. But this whole thing, man, it really tests out a marriage, huh?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Because
it's been great though.
It's completely 180 from when I was working that full schedule. Yeah. You know, I'm home a day and a half, so she gets me for a day and a half, but then all of a sudden she gets me for 24/7, and it's
is your Jimmy, is your wife Have you all been married since you know, back in the days when you were on the road all the time?
Yeah, we got married in September of 1999, September 5th. I'm going to give you the exact date because if I don't remember the exact date, you know, that's heat. But yeah, September 5th, 1999. And believe it or not, because of the marriage, leading into a little bit of a story here, it led into a little bit of an angle on TV that I got involved in by accident, or actually just kidding around. And it was all Hunter's doing too.
Mm. What is it? Now I want
to, what happened?
I've got to jump in here and prod you. What's the story? Yeah.
Well, remember they were doing the striking referee angle because they were being abused and they walked off the job and they brought in the scab referees like Dr. Tom and you know, the old Danny Davis and Brooklyn Brawler was refereeing and stuff like that.
Yes.
That was during the time I went on my honeymoon and, you know, JR was gracious. I got 2 weeks off, went to Europe. I get back and they're doing this angle. And, you know, and I'm saying, okay, this is cool, kind of, sort of. And I guess I'm going to strike outside. Hunter walks up and goes, hey, Corduroy, because he used to call me Corduroy. Welcome back. How was the honeymoon? I said, it was awesome. He says, too bad you're not working right now. You're on strike. And I said, as a joke, I just turned to him and said, Hunter, I can't I just got married. I can't afford to go on strike. I need the payday. And he went, come with me. And so I followed him. He took me straight to the, like, to creative and said, hey, here's an angle we can work. He's the one guy that can't, you know, go on strike because he needs to work. And which led to the big angle at the pay-per-view where I was refereeing the six-pack challenge match. All the other refs came out, dragged me out, and beat the living crap out of me.
So you turned on your colleagues and jumped the picket line?
Yeah. I was the one, I guess... Does that make me a scab ref? I guess it does. You know,
Hey man, you got to do what you got to do, right? Mama, exactly. Hey, my baby needs diapers and a new pair of shoes.
Yeah, exactly. But it was amazing how just kidding around, throwing an offhanded comment like that led to something like that. It was amazing.
Yeah, and Hunter wasn't even like involved in really. I mean, he didn't have a title there. Yeah, we were both just talent at the time, right? But he was still influential.
Oh yeah, definitely.
When it came to that, but yeah, Jimmy. Hey, so you know when Nick and I were talking about this, like I was like thinking about putting I still want to do this, putting a panel together, discussion like you and some other referees. You know, like I was talking to Coyote about it, Mike Chioda called.
Yeah,
but I was thinking about getting some other people because, man, I don't think a lot of people understand the importance of a good, competent referee in there, Jimmy.
Yeah, it's interesting, and I hate to say it, but you know, watching some of today's product, I don't think people realize how important the referee is. Not in getting themselves noticed or getting themselves over. I learned over the years that the important job of the referee is to help the talent tell their story.
Yeah,
and the only time. And you're invisible until you need to be seen. And if there's any angle in there or any spot that involves a referee, again, it's not about you getting your shit in. It's about you helping them tell that story. And I think a lot of, I don't want to say a lot, but there are instances in today's world where I see that there are referees out there that are over-exaggerating stuff. You know what I mean? Overselling, over... No, just... help the guys tell their story.
Yeah. So the thing is, like, I'm thinking about like how a referee can really fuck a match up too. You know, like just to put, like, hey, so and I can't remember his name. How long were you like? Okay, I'm jumping all over the place here, Jimmy.
No, it's cool.
How long, what year did you start for Vince?
Okay. I started actually working for the Canadian office when they were associated with WWF at the time.
Yeah.
In 85, but I started refereeing, okay. I started refereeing about, want to say late 86, early 87.
Hey, so did you ever like go to the shows like at the Montreal Forum and all that too?
Oh yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Do you remember they had a local referee there? He was an older dude, and they would put him on the show. He was the I and like I'm sure he was a nice guy, but he was the worst fucking referee in the history, in the entire history of wrestling. We would be down for our fucking near falls. I remember Savio wanted to kill him one time. Wherever the fall, you know, it's important, the cadence of the count. It's like the one, two, this guy gets down. He's like, and every time he would go for the count, he'd ask us, now? And then it would take him forever to count. Like, shit like that. Dude, it is so important, man. Like, just making the count properly, you know. I mean, especially for the near falls, dude. Like, damn. See, but that guy. Do you know that guy? The guy I'm talking about.
I know. I wish I could remember his name, but I know exactly who you're talking about.
I don't want to name shame him, but like.
Yeah, but Montreal was one. They had a commission there, so he was their commission guy that was assigned. Yeah, you know what I mean? It was like the good old boys club. Here we go. You know, he'd been there for decades working in the Montreal territory and stuff like that in Quebec. Spoke English, but not great English, you know. And you know, you brought up like the near falls and the false finishes leading up to the finish. See, in the referees, for me, I learned later on, obviously it takes time to learn this stuff, and you're all constantly learning, let's put it that way, is that as the match progresses and it gets closer and closer and excited, your energy level builds along with the match.
Yeah.
So as the false finishes get closer and closer, I don't want to say animated, but you can see the excitement level is there for everybody.
Well, yeah, I think the referee should show some, I think it's okay. As long as it's, you were talking about earlier, some referees that get too over exaggerated, and yeah, I agree. But I do think it's important that you guys are giving us the impression you're in the middle of some intense shit going on here,
competition. Yeah. And you're enjoying the match as much as the audience is, but you're doing it from a different perspective. Yeah. And the other thing that I've noticed lately, and rules matter. And back then you guys, paid attention to the rules, breaking before five, getting back in the ring before the 10 count instead of
tags.
The tags. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You had a five count, hold that damn rope, the rules meant something back in the day. Now it seems to be a little bit, I hate to say it, but there seems to be a little bit of not paying attention to them as much now, letting things slide a little too much.
Yeah, and that's something I wanted to, while we're talking about this, Sean, because I know, like, I met you on the Indies, and I know you've worked with, all the way at the top of the card. We're going to talk about you facing The Rock for the WWE Championship a little bit later on the show. But when you're working with younger talent or independent talent right now, do you talk to them about protecting the ref and using the ref and all of that when they're putting together the matches with younger talent now? Do you find that to be pretty regular for you, having to explain how to protect the ref in a match?
Jimmy?
Well, I was asking you, Sean. Like, if
you're asking me,
yeah, like when
it's usually not like. I mean, it doesn't really come up that often, to be honest with you, Nick.
Yeah,
not for me. Like when I go and do my matches, in the last few years, I might utilize the ref just so like I used to do a spot where we go into a top. Up into a top wrist lock, and I'd grab the ref's shoulders and do a backflip and then do a little something. Mm-hmm. And the ref would kind of get hot at me or whatever, admonish me a little bit. But other than that, it wasn't a lot, going on. I was just trying to get through the matches and entertain the people at that point, just to be straight up keeping it 100, Conan. Mm-hmm. But, there's times like we have this thing we call false tags where when you get in the heat on the baby face and the baby face is trying to go for that tag. You know what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally.
and then the heel comes in and draws the ref and then he makes the tag, but the ref don't see it. And then the ref goes and da, 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 da. Mm-hmm. And the ref's really important, for those and then it's, man, there's just so much, dude, when it comes to refereeing.
I guess the reason I asked you is because I've talked to Jimmy so much about how the wrestlers don't seem to have the same kind of respect for the rules like that, like he said there used to be. Like, the wrestlers today seem to be a little bit more relaxed, and I don't know that the same respect for the referee and the rules is kind of there.
Like all this shit with putting hand, like pushing the referee and stuff like that, for the most part, like I think it shouldn't be done, man. Mm-hmm. You know, I think it really helps when the ref has credibility. It really fucking helps.
Absolutely. And you know, Sean brought up like the false tags and stuff like that, and the distraction of the referee is so important that it's done in a way where it looks like, you know, the heels are actually manipulating the referee, as opposed to looking, hate to use this word again, what I've been noticing lately looks lazy. Like it's almost like, yeah, just go with him. You know what I mean? And stay with him, and we'll call you when we need you, kind of. And all this stuff goes on without rhyme or reason, you know?
And then so people also, like, people make the mistake of trying to do the same thing in six-mans. But we have an extra baby face over here, and the referee can only go to one person. So, like, when they try that shit in a six-man, like, the baby faces always get buried, usually. Mm-hmm. So it's just, there's so much to all that shit, man. Mm-hmm. It's just, oh, and then, hey, Jimmy.
Yes.
It wasn't really a thing, but I've told this to people that I mentor, and like, mm-hmm. you know, and even like when I'm help producing matches down at NXT, like if you're having like some intricate shit you're planning, like, don't be afraid to ask the referee, man. Like I know, like, as a ref, Jimmy, I know you have, you know, more than one match to take care of, mm-hmm. you know? And it's like you can't remember everybody's high spots and finishes for every single match. But if there's an important one, you can really be a huge help out there, man. Like, with somebody, you know, maybe they can't remember, mm-hmm. you know, the spot, or maybe they draw a blank or something out there, because mm-hmm. there's a lot of greats that had problems like that out there. Mr. Perfect used to have problem remembering stuff, mm-hmm. and it would be like, you know, so like I've always suggested that, and I don't know, like, Jimmy, was that ever a thing with guys coming up to you, hey man, this one spot or this finish, can you help, you know, we might need you to help call it to us out there?
No, there have been a few times where somebody would come up, hey, when we get to this particular point in the match, please, if I'm not in the right spot, remind me where I need to be and stuff like that. And you know, and that's fine. And when they tell me that, I made a, you know, very conscious effort to remember all that stuff. And if I see that they're not going, the thing is, with it's different from a house show and TV, because at a house show, you know, you can walk over and say, hey, you know, whatever they ask you to say. On TV, now you got to be discreet and relay the message in a way that it looks like you're doing your job, instead of walking over and going, hey, you know, you need to be in the corner or something like that.
But now, man, I get an extra, like when I have a referee in there that like I can count on for shit like that, it's just an extra sense of security, you know?
Yeah. Yeah,
it just feels secure. It's like a security blanket.
That's what that was my goal. I just wanted people to be, not to be nervous about who's our ref. Jimmy's our ref. Ah, damn.
You know, you make a really good security blanket, Jimmy.
Oh, thank you. I just didn't want to be the guy. I wanted to be the guy that, you know, that you guys could count on.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. And like you two have known each other for so long, and Jimmy, like, you know, you were there a little before even Sean was, you know, the 1-2-3 kid, right? Mm-hmm. Just to kind of slow it down here for just a moment, what are your memories of a young Sean Waltman? Like, what did you think when you saw what was happening with him getting the big win over Razor?
Razor.
Yeah. What were your thoughts about what was going on with Sean from somebody that was there close watching what happened with his rise there?
Well, the first thing that came to me, and this is being completely 100 honest here, is I was a little bit surprised by it at first, because, you know, that was the era of the Giants. You know what I mean? Everybody, there was that persona that, you know, WWF was the land of the Giants and everybody had to be big. And then you saw a guy who wasn't as big as the other guys get that, you know, huge win. And it was like, man, this is the coolest thing ever. And the response, the reaction from the crowd, they were genuinely happy to see him beat Razor Ramon. See, that was a different time. And I'm going to go off on a tangent now about today again. I hate to do this. I know we're talking about the past, but if that exact match were to happen today instead of being happy that the 1-2-3 kid beat the hated Razor Ramon, the guy that everybody wanted to see get lose and get his butt kicked, they would have been, you know, now today's fans are like, oh, look at that Razor. What a nice guy doing the honors for, you know, everybody thinks they're on the inside now. And instead of saying, yay, he won finally. Yes, he beat the bad guy. They're like, oh, man, you know, I don't know. It just.
Yeah. It's like you can't even enjoy the feel good moment for a second because you're fucking dissecting every fucking thing.
Yeah. When did fans become critics all of a sudden? You know what I mean?
Well, everybody's a critic now. Hey, man, it's their prerogative to be that way if they want. It's just, it used to be more people just used to like
enjoy the show. Enjoy.
Yeah. But enjoy the show. Some people still do, but people, you know, and mm-hmm. so, and those people, I guess, still doing their own way, man. You know, mm-hmm. it's just so much different than back in my day.
Yeah, exactly. But like I always said, and I've said this to Nick before, you can blend old school with new school. It can be done well, and that's why for me right now, my favorite wrestling product out there is NXT, because I think NXT is the perfect blend of old school meets new school, because there's still that old school psychology,
yeah,
but they're blending in a little bit of what you know, the younger, newer fans or the quote in the know fans want to see.
Yeah, I agree. I something I used to say a lot at one time, that's been a while since I said it, but like, I don't really look at things like old school and new school so much as right school or wrong school. Like, but even that's not necessarily like the absolute only way of looking at it. It's just, you know, some things always work, man.
Yeah.
You know, some things are always work and always will. You know, if they're done right.
Exactly. And what's the one thing that's been a constant in our business since day one is you've had a good guy and a bad guy. You know, every once in a while you end up with a guy like Stone Cold Steve Austin, who's kind of like that borderline, you know, but still a baby face, but could also be a heel at the same time. But not everybody can be Stone Cold. Not everybody can be The Rock. Not everybody can be that, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, I asked you what you thought about the big 1-2-3 kid moment and getting to see Sean break out like that. But then later on, you know, Sean kind of developed some clout there, right? He's rolling with some people of influence. What did you think of the click, Jimmy, as somebody that was really not writing?
Yeah,
I'm
curious.
Yeah,
you know, to be perfectly honest with you, I got along with you guys fine. You know what I mean? It was like, you know. You know how it is in the locker room. All of a sudden you hear somebody going, man, you know, these guys over here. And I'm like, you know, I'm in my own world setting up the ring. You know, I still think to this day I should be sainted for hanging out with Tony Chimmel for so long and being his friend.
Oh, dude.
I kid him. I rib him. But Tony's awesome.
I love Tony. The Rodney Dangerfield of pro wrestling.
Exactly. But again, I didn't witness the stuff that, you know, the rumors and all that stuff that everybody talked about. I got along with them just fine. Everybody, you know, and
also like our hijinks and all the, like our actions or whatever, like they didn't affect you. Like like it was perceived, they affected, you know, like the in-ring talent so much. Right. So it wasn't like you would have, you know, like maybe if you felt like what we were doing affected, you know, your position on the card or something, you might've felt a little different. Jimmy, I don't know.
maybe, but I was always treated well by you guys, and
you just saw as such a nice guy, you know, like your demeanor, like, dude, anyone that's a dick to you, like, what the fuck, man? I can't even imagine. But people are like, you ever have that? Jay, were there people around that just didn't like you for some reason?
I will be honest. I think so. I won't mention any names, but it wasn't one of the boys. It was someone in the office later on, but I'll just leave it at that.
Okay. Yeah.
I just think there was, here's to make a long story short, there was a time where it looked like they were going to transition me a little bit into more like a Timmy White role.
Yeah.
You know, where you're kind of like an agent kind of thing. And, sure. Let me just say that one, as you remember at TV, one of the agents had to sit there and take the times down when the guys arrived.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And when guys arrived late, you had to mark that down. And
yeah,
I hated doing that. It was like,
was that in the early 90s part? Cause there was a time like when that was going on, when George Steele,
yeah,
I remember like Owen comes in like literally 1 minute after, and like George is fining him $500, and like Owen blew a gasket and he kicked the fucking window, blew out of this fucking, there was like a little gym in this high school we were, and the windows in the gym even had that, you know, that metal, like,
yeah,
there was like metal in there to keep it from shattering.
Weaved metal that's real.
Yeah, exactly. Dude, yeah. That didn't stop it from shattering when Owen kicked that fucking thing. He was so mad. Because it was bullshit, man. Like, you literally, like, yeah, like, so what if your clock's, a little fast, motherfucker?
Yeah, I just, to me, I just didn't like that part of it. Do you know what I mean? I love the idea of it, but I that particular part of it, you know, again, hating using the word, you felt like a stooge.
Oh yeah, putting you in that position, like that.
Yeah, and I unfortunately voiced my displeasure about it, which didn't sit well with a few people. So,
last thing I kind of want to jump in here before we go on to something else. You know, Sean, I know how proud you are. You know how you collaborated with so many people and got to have input on your matches. And I know Jimmy, you've talked to me about how from time to time you would maybe mention something here or there that, you know, you were part of that collaborative experience, like. You know, Sean, were you open when referees would come in and ask, bring something up or point something out? Did you like having referees in the conversation when putting together?
I wasn't against it, but I just don't remember it ever really coming up, Nick, to be honest with you.
Okay. Just curious.
Yeah.
Okay.
I tell you what though, like, I mean, there were just certain refs that you ended up like, I don't know, Jimmy, how did that work, man? How did you guys figure out who was getting assigned to who?
Well, actually,
pecking it was order. Talk about the pecking order.
No, it was basically, you know, Earl was the head guy. Earl was our guy. And, you know, and it went down from there. And the referees were assigned by either Jack Lanza or Chief, Jay Strongbow. You know, they.
Did you have a nickname? Did Chief have a nickname for you, Jimmy?
No, he just called me Jimmy. Yeah. I know we had Coyote or Chichi or Kiki and stuff like that, but
D'Amico was John Brown.
John Brown, yes. John Brown. Oh my goodness. John Brown. Mark Yaton was Goat Boy, and anyway. Oh my god.
Oh, you're shitting me, was he?
Yeah, because he had the farm out there in Pennsylvania. So you know, Chimmel started that by saying, oh, he raises goats out there on the farm. So they Goat Boy, and then it stuck, and poor guy was like labeled.
Mark Eaton was a really nice guy.
Yeah, yeah.
But definitely. You know, I felt really bad, and because I fucking got so mad at him one time, Jimmy. But like to carry it on like and I, he did fuck up a bit, but we had had this cage match, right? And like I put him over in the cage match, and like it was my turn to get, you know, to get my heat back on TV. So we had this fucking, not that I really needed to get it back, but that's, you know how that goes, right? so they gave like the Jericho and I have this first blood match. We have a fucking first blood match on Raw. And so we use the candy glass, like bottles. So like we were going to use that for the color. Right. And so, but you know, those things are so fragile, and they could break real easy with that barely touching them. So we had, Mark, I'm sorry for telling this story, but like I'm telling it just to talk about what an asshole I was at the time.
Okay, go for it.
Like we told Jimmy, we told Mark to put the bottles like under the timekeeper's table, but not near each other in case one broke. Like we don't want them to break against each other, right? You know, because we needed two just in case. And like so, when it come time to get under there to give it the bottle, I go under there, and Mark had put them right next to each other, and they both were broken. Oh my god, I fucking flipped the gasket, dude. Like you could see me out there when I'm doing it. I'm taking the already broken bottle and hitting Chris in the head. Like, and you know, so like I took it out on Chris, you know. And then I just like, oh, I was so mad at him about it. And it was like, yeah, like I wish it wouldn't have happened, but like, man, I really like I held on to that for way too. Mark's a really good fucking guy. So Mark, I'm very sorry for being an asshole about that.
Yeah.
You're a good motherfucker.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, there you go.
There we go. Ran off the wheat, but it's okay. That was a good story.
Yeah, yeah. No, cool. Yeah.
Yeah. You just made me think of that when you brought up the joke and stuff and everything. Love you, Mark.
Well, Jimmy, I want to thank you for joining us on the show before we let you go. Mm-hmm. Is there anything you want to plug, promote, put over, anything like that?
Oh, really quickly here. Obviously, I do my weekday ref and rant. It's just a minute long video I do on my social media, which is on Twitter at Jimmy Corderas, Instagram at Real Jimmy Corderas, because apparently somebody else stole my name somewhere there. So I had to put Real in front of it. Yeah. And I also have ref and rant t-shirts now on prowrestlingtees.com. The store is called Jimmy the Ref. And yeah, who knows? Maybe some coffee mugs will be coming soon too.
Jimmy, real quick, man, not including yourself, give me like, I was going to say top five, but like, okay, top five refs in your opinion ever.
Oh my goodness. Wow.
I know, right? These are tough questions. Like I get stumped when I get asked shit like this.
Yeah. So because
if you don't have a good answer, like
the class,
you don't have to be in order, Jimmy.
By the way, the hipper thing to do when framing this is give me your Mount Rushmore of referees. That's what the headline is on all the news sites.
You know? Wow. That's the toughest one for me, and no particular order. And I apologize if I'm leaving out some guys because there's some really good refs out there. Tommy Young used to love Tommy Young.
Yes.
He was probably the referee that
as good
that
as anyone ever.
Yes. Who got me. You know, like I say, the referees aren't supposed to be noticed, but I noticed how good Tommy Young was from day one. Yeah. I'm thinking back. Mark Hildebrand was good. Of course, the Hebners. Brian Hebner, who's still going right now. I'm surprised he's not out there, you know, on main TV. He should be. Yeah. You know, and wow. Who else? Obviously, Coyote. We were talking about Kyoto. You know, guys you can count on. When I'm thinking about guys now, I'm looking at John Cone and thinking he's really good.
Yeah.
You know, you've got some guys down in NXT too that are.
It's harder for me to judge the guys these days because, like, for me personally, I judge a lot of it by like my experiences with them in the ring.
Right. You know? Yeah. But there's a lot of good refs, but there's some out there that really frustrate me. I'm again not going to name names, but I got called out on a certain. Sirius XM station, they interviewed somebody from AEW, and they think that I bury their refs a little too often in my ref and rants.
But, their talent buries the refs.
Thank you for saying that. I mean, like, you talk about protecting your referees, it's just what gets me too is you look at the talent that's there behind the scenes. You've got your Dean Malenkos. You've got your Arn Andersons. Amazing, you've got some amazing talent. Billy Gunn, who, you know what I mean? You got some guys who know how to utilize the referees. Is it that they just don't listen?
It's just, man, okay, so, like, some of the guys that are coming from Mexico, like AAA specifically, you know, it's just, man, they really don't, you know how it is, right? Like, and their tag situations are different down there. Like, and they come up here, like, honestly, I wish there would be a little bit more of an effort to adjust to how it's done here when you're here.
Yeah. No, I hear you. And, the only thing missing is wearing suspenders and then, or red shoes or something like that.
Oh, Red Shoes Dugan.
Yeah.
Good old Red Shoes Dugan.
By the way, just again, here's the plug.
Oh, there's the mug.
There's the mug. Thank you. Thank you to the missus. She got that made.
Hey, so okay, one like another thing since look, it was just a little too much for me that drop down leapfrog spot the ref did in that tag match on NXT. It was just a little bit too much for me, man. Like, it wasn't the worst thing in the world or anything, but I just thought it was just a little much.
Yeah,
you know what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah, exactly, with Daryl. The but Daryl, former worker as well too. So,
right.
Luckily, they picked him because if it was me, I wouldn't. The drop down would have been fine. The leapfrog might have been a problem. But I agree with you. I think it was a little bit too much. But then again, that match was a little bit more of a babyface match, and they were trying to do a little bit of comedy there. And it's not like Daryl called a spot. Hey, do this, and I'll do a drop down leapfrog.
Right.
The guys called that spot. You know what I mean? But
It was. Look, It wasn't something that I was like, oh man, like I want to like, you know, I wasn't getting Jim Cornette over it or anything. You know, losing my mind,
right?
Over it. But because I mean, there's been times like, you know, one time in the Garden, you know, we're doing a six man. I think it was like Rock and the Dudleys or Steve Austin, something like that. Mm-hmm. We were in the main event.
Right.
At the Madison Square Garden. And so it's me, Hunter, and Road Dogg. And just like, so Road Dogg just goes to Baby Earl and he shoves him. And, you know, obviously he tells shove me back and he takes a bump, kind of like the Flair thing that Flair used to do a lot, you know. Mm-hmm. And then both Dogg and I fed up on the apron and got, you know, knocked out. And the place went fucking nuts, dude.
Right. And
man, you're really walking a thin line, man, on being able to get away with doing that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Definitely. But I hear you.
We got away with it. But like, man, that's risky as fuck. But it worked. It was fine.
On a live event, it's fine. On TV, that's a different story. Oh, yeah. And this is coming from a guy who got to do all that fun lie, cheat, and steal stuff with Eddie back in the day. And you know, God bless him. And, you know, allowing me to actually even put my two cents. You know, Eddie was the kind of guy who'd say, hey, this is the spot we want to do for the lie, cheat, and steal with the chair and stuff like that. What do you think? He's asking my opinion. I'm like, holy shit. Eddie Guerrero's asking me what I think. Awesome. You know, like, so I got
feels
to do some
good, really right? cool
stuff. Yeah, it does feel
good. Yeah. Hey, you know, like if it was more widely known that referee was a, you know, also like our actual like pro wrestler, like it probably would have, I don't know, it would have helped me.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just wasn't aware of that.
And no, I know because I know him from here. He's Canadian. He's from Canada here. And I know him. He's a good dude.
Really good dude. Really good. And good referee too.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
And I feel like as the younger person here, I'm like kind of desensitized a little bit when I see things like that, you know, because I'm just so used to seeing referees do be more part of the show. Like we've talked about it. Like the AEW refs are like encouraged to go out there
like I would see Rick Knox. I love Rick Knox too. Yeah. Like I would see him do like fucking Tope Code Hero off the top rope to the floor. Sure.
Yeah. But there is an AEW ref again, who I will not name, that sells more than the guy who's getting the actual move done to him. Mm. You know what I mean? When a guy gets punched in the face, if the referee does a subtle, ooh, that looked like it hurt. You know what I mean? As opposed to going, oh, and grabbing your own face. You know, you didn't get punched, dude. You didn't land flat.
Oh, somebody's grabbing their own.
Yeah, they're grabbing their own back.
The fucking Corsican.
Yeah.
I don't know. They're feeling the pain by osmosis. I don't know what the heck's going on.
Well, I was as a manager all the time. I was told to sell, you know, when my guy was down and things like that to make it look bigger. But you're right. As a referee, it just kind of takes away from it. So
especially when you're standing between the guys and you're getting seen on TV.
Yeah.
And it's a fine line, dude, on the manager thing, even because that can be distracting too, man. Sometimes I'm like to the manager, hey, man, fucking calm down out there, dude. Yeah. We're fucking trying to do something here.
Right.
Yeah, that may have been me.
Damn it, Nick. It wasn't you.
Fuck it.
All right, everyone. Once again, I was going to say it's one of my favorite segments of the show, but there's not that many segments. So, I love this segment. It's the retrospective segment. And joining us this week from Cultaholic, we have Sir Thomas Campbell. Actually, it's just Tom Campbell. I don't know.
Thomas is my birth certificate and when I'm in trouble with my mum. So happy to be Sir Thomas. How are you doing, sir? I just said before we started, it feels like at least 3 weeks since we last spoke.
At least.
Nice to catch up again.
At least Nick's like, hey, this is Tom. I'm like, yeah, I know Tom.
Think about years, me and you. We've been doing it forever.
Ages. So, Tom, What are we talking about today?
Well, I wanted to do a little bit of a UK flavour with you, sir. And I'm pulling out of your memory banks. X-Pac versus The Rock, Capital Carnage, yeah. 1998, which a lot of people may not be familiar with. It was a UK-only pay-per-view,
yeah.
One of a few that they did. And I wanted to have a little dance around this and kind of touch on some of your experiences touring in the UK as well, since I'm the first Brit from, you know, from this side, the first person this side of the water to be chatting to you on your show. So felt right to do it, really.
Well, so usually I know, like, a couple of days in advance of like what I'm going to talk about in this segment, but like this is just like I'm just finding this out, so it's like a legit surprise.
Okay,
it's cool. I'm glad we're talking about this.
If you get to a point you can't remember anything, we'll just talk about the X Factor or something. It'd be fine.
Yeah, no. You'd be surprised, man. Like, I mean, for the rep I have, as far, you know, all the shots to the head and all the drugs and shit I've done in my life, like a lot of my memory is pretty sharp, especially when it comes to shit like this. So,
well, let's just dive into it. So, like, this was, as I say, a UK only pay-per-view on Sky box office over here. What was the vibe about touring in the UK during the Attitude Era that you got from the WWF? Was it a big thing to come over here?
Yeah, it was still a big thing. Okay, so you remember like pre-Attitude Era days, right? Like New Generation, whatever you want to call it, right?
Yeah.
That was our bread and butter over there, Tom. I think you know that, right? Like, I mean, business was dead here in the States. And man, we were over there more than we were like back here. Like, we'd have to come back here just to do TV. And then we'd be back on a goddamn plane back over to Europe again so we can make some actual money. So
you were we were starved of it over here. So, like, especially during like the New Generation era, we were glad to have it. Then during the Attitude Era, wrestling got really weird over here because we started getting tribute acts to the WWF guys. There was a guy, and I wish I knew his name. He was a tribute X-Pac.
1-2-3 boy or something.
that was
before. There was like a 1-2-3 boy pre-Attitude Era stuff, right? Then so yeah, I think I met that guy. Actually.
Oh, wow. Did you do the mirror thing?
It was kind of cool. Like, you know, man, like, I appreciate shit like that. You know, like, trying to make a buck. Like honestly, Tom, I guess it could be kind of weird, but, like, man.
It's like it's bands having tribute acts, isn't it? It's that same thing.
Yeah. It's like Strutter, like the Kiss tribute band or something like that.
Talon and No Way Sis. It's that, isn't it?
I never took offense to it. I never felt like somebody was ripping me off, you know, or like taking money out of my pocket. I never thought about it like that.
That's cool, because it was ace. No, not at all. It was just like we were starved of it, and you guys were the biggest game in town, so of course you're going to lean towards it. But when you did come here, it was a big deal. This wasn't a tour that we had for Capital Carnage. It was a one and done show that you flew into London to do and flew back again. How were these UK only pay per views presented to you, like, as from management in terms of flying over to the UK? Was it a good money earner for you? Was it a status thing? What was the track?
I don't remember it being any different money wise or anything like that. Those were good. Those were good, man. They felt good. They were strong. You know, I mean, I could just tell you how I felt about still going over there. Like, even though, business was picked back up in the States, man, it was still really important to me personally, you know? And for me, I was in one of the main events. Probably, I think it might've been the main event of that night. Right. Like,
You were second from last on that
something
night.
Something like that. I was in the WWF title match.
But it was the whole thing moved around so much. And so we'll dig into it a little bit, actually. So, because your opponent for that night changed apparently a few times, once on the night and once apparently before. So I don't know whether you can shed any light on this. So as we've said, like, you face The Rock on this pay-per-view for the WWF title. Yeah. But there was some, to quote Conrad, some rumor and innuendo that you were going to face Steven Regal that night for the European title. Is there any truth to that?
I never heard anything of the sort. It was always, excuse me. It was not like I knew quite a, you know, quite a ways ahead of time. I was working with Rock on that. And I was really, man, I was honored like that they thought of me. You know, I think that was his first title defense too, I'm pretty sure.
His first pay-per-view title defense. Everybody says it was In Your House, Rock Bottom. Nah. We were there first. It was Capital Carnage 98. It was that nice.
And it was weird because I remember when they told Pat came and told us to finish. And I remember Rock was like, really? Like it was his first title defense, and it was like a DQ, right? I think I won by DQ or something like that.
So Triple H ran in and got the disqualification win in favor of The Rock, but he was helping you out.
Yeah, something like that.
But I knew
it wasn't like, and I understood where Rock was coming, where Rocky was coming from. It was like, man, it's his first title defense, and he can't get it, you know, a solid win. But it was, you know, it was also, I think I was the European champion at the time, right?
Mm.
Yeah.
That was it. Which is why, like, there was some speculation that you might have ended, because you were meant to face, in terms of, like, how it all panned out on the night. So the one speculation was Stephen Regal. That wasn't the case. But then, obviously, on the night, we'd been told that it was going to be Triple H challenging The Rock for the world title, and you were going to be facing Jeff Jarrett. And then Pat Patterson, Gerald Briscoe, and the McMahons come out, cut that blistering 15-minute promo, which I do want to dabble on a little bit as well, where it was all swapped around. So, as you say, you knew quite far out that was going to happen. So did you know that was going to be, they were going to switch it on the night?
I honestly, Todd, you're telling me this right now. It's the first I heard of it. There were other things going on, you know, that night too. So I really wasn't up to speed on every single thing going on, you know, on the show, other than my match and whatever I was involved in. So, honestly, Tom, this is the first I've heard of that.
Oh, yeah, because it was part of, like, an amazing promo that Pat Patterson came out and did and swapped the matches around. Vince came out and insulted the audience. It was whilst drinking a cup of tea. It was a really fun moment. But, like, so talk me through your day then before that match. So it was a one-off show. So you'd flown into – you flew into London. Did you have stuff to do, like media stuff to do during the day? Was it just straight to the venue? Like, how did your day pan out that day in London? Can you remember?
I wish I could remember. Like, if I said, oh, yeah, we got off the plane, we got on the bus, you know, went to customs, got on the bus, went to the hotel. Like, I'd be lying if I said that. Like, I remember whether we did that or not, man. Like, we could very well have just gone straight to the venue. I don't remember. Because, like you said, it was a one-off show. It wasn't like we were on a tour over there. And you know, we were doing the charter flights at the time. So we might have, like, just got in and out of there real quick. I can't even remember.
That's fair enough. You'd faced The Rock on Raw a couple of weeks before it. You guys had I think, like, that was his first title defense on Raw was against you, and then the first pay-per-view title defense was against you as well. And Shawn Michaels had got involved in that match. He ended up joining the corporation. Shawn came and went a bit during the late 90s. There was a lot of stuff going on with Shawn, but where was he at this particular point, so December of 1998? How was he?
I don't know, man. I think he was still having some issues. From what after watching the A&E biography they did on him the other night, like, I guess it's apparent, like, there was still some issues going on with him personally, you know, in his life. Nothing I'm so, like, I don't know. I gotta be honest with you, like, okay, so that title match, and Shawn came in, he waffled me over the head with the chair, you know, screwed me over. Dude, that took a lot out of me, Tom.
Really?
Oh, bro. He folded that fucking chair over my head.
It looked rough, but yeah, I said, and was it when that happened? Because obviously you've had neck issues in the past. When he waffled you with the chair, was there a little flash of, is this going to be all right? Am I okay here?
No.
Just whatever.
That was just a chair shot. Like, you know, like, there wasn't the first hard chair shot I ever took, or the last. So, but I don't know. I just remember that we had a hell of a Rock and I had a hell of a match that night, man. And that was the finish of it.
The Rock's, this is the Rock's first WWF title run. Like, we're days into it. Rock's now a millionaire. He's the WWF champ. He's the corporate champ. Working with The Rock at this point, was what was that like with somebody who was still like who was become the people's champion, but was nowhere near his final form in terms of what he would be. What was that like being the first person to get in there with him as this new heel version of The Rock?
Well, see, even before that title match that we were just talking about on Raw, like one of my first matches on Raw, like the first really good match I had on Raw after I came back was the IC title match with Rock. So like, and it was a hell of a match. We had like 25 minute match. And so we had great chemistry. We really liked working with each other. So, I mean, all that was already not, like, I just, man, it was just a really good guy to work with at the time. And you knew he was going to get better, but like, and you know, you see a lot of us saw like, you know, looked at him and saw that there was potential for him to be a huge star, like he is now, you know?
Yeah, the crowd were a bit of they were a mixed bag on the night. They were really lively at some points. They seemed, at least on watching it back, quite quiet at others. And there were bits in this match. You guys were going hammer and tongs, and they seemed like they were cool, or they were blowing air horns. Like, what was the vibe from the crowd that night for that particular show? Can you remember?
Well, usually the crowds were fine. Mm. I don't know. Like looking back, okay. Just to be honest, like, I think there were some parts of the match that they didn't like, that Vince didn't like. Like, he would have liked, like, I remember him mentioning it. Like, it was, honestly, I think Vince was disappointed in the match.
What made you say that?
Because he mentioned it.
Did he give you any details as to why?
I think there was some areas in it where he was, like, maybe wished that would have been a little bit more higher energy, you know. Yeah. I like, looking back, it's hard for me to exactly put finger on it, exactly what he meant, but like, you know, there were some spots in the match, you know, I look back on that I would have liked to have done different,
you know? Which one, anything that you can think of that you think might have spiced it up a little bit more?
Just, you know, maybe a little bit more life, you know, show a little bit more life in the heat.
Mm. With that, there was a bit early into the match, The Rock tried to leave, got on the mic, told everybody to kiss his corporate backside, off he goes. Triple H brings him back down to the ring. Triple H ringside, and obviously that he plays into the finish there. We're a few months out from the almighty DX heel turn, the one that left me as a fan reeling watching WrestleMania 15. Me and my brother sat up late, watched that, devastated. But at this point, like December, a Capital Carnage, when this sort of play is going on between you and Triple H and China, had the conversation started about a DX split at this point?
You know, I imagine it may have, but like the conversation, if that conversation had already started happening, it hadn't included me yet.
Right. When you kind of got wind that this was coming, what were your feelings on it being so attached to the DX?
Well, you know,
identity.
Okay. I just remember as a group, I remember Dog and Billy being pretty worried, because look, man, we were getting, you know, our merchandise checks would come every quarter, and you know, those were six figure checks when you're in D-Generation X. So like, and you get used to those fat six-figure quarterly royalty checks, man. Like, and you think, hey, but what's this going to do to my royalty checks, you know, and my bottom line? And so there was concern over that. I don't remember being that concerned over that, to be honest with you. And you know, at that point, Vince had already talked to me about working WrestleMania with Shane. You know, he brought me in and talked to me. Like, hey, man, hey, Sean, you know, this is what I was thinking, wanting to have you work with Shane. You know, I mean, I was honored, you know, but I made a couple of conditions. Okay, I get to call the shots, you know, I'm in charge of this, and I get to go over, you know, I win the match. And that was all agreed to. So once Hunter, you know, once we started talking about the fact that he was going to turn, and you know, all the different ways that might play out, it was obvious to me the only way that turn was going to mean anything was if he turned on me and cost me the match. So that was actually my idea. No one asked me to do that.
It was a moment. It was a moment in time that just genuinely floored everybody. But to take it back to Capital Carnage, that was a big night for yourself going in as a champion, fighting for the WWF title as well. Do you have a particular favorite moment from your time in the WWE that was based in the UK?
Not really, Tom. I just because there's so much time.
There's a lot
there, you know, and it's just y'all over there was so good to us, you know, and it felt like home over there, man. At one point, like it felt like home, you know. It was so good to, like, you know, you see certain people, you get to know, you know, like even the fans that followed us from show to show, man. Like, man, most of us were grateful for that. Like, you know, like a lot of us would complain at the same time. Oh, you know, no pitchers right now. But my God, man, if they weren't there, we'd be depressed, I think.
You know, you need that energy.
It was just so great, man. The whole thing, the bus trips, just so much great stuff, man, and so many great memories from all that.
Just a one final point on the Rock match with Rock from Capital Carnage. Obviously the finish was a DQ, as we've talked about, but you said like the Rock was quite shocked by that. How do you think you guys would have workshopped that differently had you not gone with a DQ? Had you been given a bit more creative freedom, how do you think you would have liked the finish to have gone?
Well, I mean, I was fine with it, but I understood where he was coming from. It's his first title defense, man. A good solid win on your first title defense. But they didn't really make a big thing of it back here in the States.
It was kind of a glorified house show, which is why I'm always intrigued to see kind of what the vibe was about them. Because over here, they were advertised very heavily, and it was a house show with TV lights, essentially, with the TV lights on. And I wondered whether they were treated by yourselves any differently, or whether you kind of went into it thinking it's a sort of, not in a disrespectful way, did you see it as more than a house show, or did you treat it slightly differently?
Me personally, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
Man, because millions of people are watching you, Tom.
Yeah.
You're punishing yourself, man, if you go in there with that attitude. And so, like, okay, I'm not going to do as much because this is just a glorified house show. Yeah, but millions of people don't see it that way.
Yeah.
You know?
It's true. It's
crazy, man. And you guys gave us so much reason to give you the best we had, because, like, the energy in the venues, you know, over there was off the charts, man. You know,
we're a lively bunch, and we're full of brilliant chants, and that's probably
especially in the Attitude Era. Now, I gotta be honest, there were some times, like when I first started going over there, even though the product was hot, like sometimes I think we had gone over there so much, Tom, that we burned it out, you know. And so the crowds, like, they would still show up, but like they'd already seen so much, man, and so they weren't as hot. The buildings were still full, but the crowds weren't as hot. That makes sense.
And over here, it was a weird one because, like, we kind of noticed the pattern that there'd be these great Sky Box Office pay-per-views, and then Raw would roll around. Like, nobody's mentioned that X-Pac had a title shot on Raw. Why is no one talking about that? That was quite important, surely.
Yeah, so that's the reason, like, that they didn't mind just doing that kind of finish for Rock's first title defense, because it really wasn't his first pay-per-view title defense as far as, like, the North American fans were concerned, right?
I'm with you, yeah. Before I let you go, who's a British star that you've got your eye on? Somebody you love from this side of the water?
Oh, man.
It's loads. I know we've talked about this before. I know how you are so still connected to the product and to what wrestling's doing at the moment. And is there anybody from this side of the water that you think... You know, because obviously we got Drew McIntyre representing Scotland and as a whole, the United Kingdom. He's very
and we haven't seen any really much of him yet, but keep your eye on Ridge Holland.
Yeah, Yorkshire boy, Ridge Holland.
Yes.
Good shout.
Remember, I said it.
Luke Menzies is a beast.
Awesome.
down for that. By the way, I said Tim Henman a minute ago, making a tennis reference. I meant Andy Murray. I'm correcting myself because people will come at me in the comments if I don't. But Rich Holland is the boy. I love it. Thank you for your time. This has been ace.
I really enjoyed
chatting to you. Thank you so much.
Thank you for your time because, you know, you're returning the favor now. So appreciate you coming on.
Brilliant. Thank you, Sean.
Thanks, Tom.
Welcome to the game show portion of Pro Wrestling for Life. It is me, your game show host, Nick Hausman, and I am back here to referee a contest between a two-time Hall of Famer coming to the show right now, Sean X-Pac Waltman. Sean, welcome back to your show. Welcome to the game show.
All right. Thank you, Nick. It's a pleasure to be here today. Who is my opponent for today, Nick?
That's a great question, Sean. Well, we like to have pro wrestling influencers here, or ideally patron members. If you are a subscriber to the kid level of Patreon, you get your name thrown into the raffle. This week we have both. He is both a Patreon subscriber and...
What?
You didn't know that? You didn't know that? Yeah.
Dude, you don't need... I appreciate it.
No, he actually... I'm glad you didn't know that. But no, yeah, he's an actual Patreon subscriber. He supports this show. And he's a notable pro wrestling personality. Yeah. It's Giancarlo Didimo. Giancarlo, welcome back. Thank you very much for taking the time.
Hey, guys.
Pro wrestling play.
Giancarlo, what's up, man?
What's up, man? How are you?
Good. Hey, so like everybody, Giancarlo's actually been here in this room that I'm in right now. For people, some people might remember the little piece that, Giancarlo produced on the Tom McGee The secret lost Tom McGee match tape.
Holy Grail.
Yeah. And so, yeah, I had, how did I end up in that? Just because I had
honest with you, that was supposed to be just like a 5-minute, like little YouTube video. Yeah. And, you know, we got all this stuff happening and then we ended up contacting Tom and finding him, getting an interview with him. And then, man, I got to thank you because I just like cold texted you.
Yeah.
Out of the blue and was like, hey, you've been tweeting about this online. Any chance that, you know, we could sit down and talk about it? And I was expecting you to, you know, we maybe arrange somewhere to shoot it. But you were just like, hey, come over.
Yeah, come
and
on.
And that
over,
was dude. It. Yeah. Yeah. So thank you for that, man.
Yeah, man. Last time I saw you, I mean, I suppose we're going to get to playing a game here in a second. But
yeah.
like last time I saw you was when I was inducted into the most recent Hall of Fame. And
yeah,
you were talking to me about maybe doing another project with me. We can still do it, dude.
Yeah. So, I'd love to, you know, I'd love to be a part of the, you know, I'm no longer with the WWE as of 2 weeks ago. But man, you know, I was a huge fan of you growing up. And if there's any chance to be a part of the camp of, you know, to get you back in the ring, and if we can document it and tell that story, you know, let's do it.
And like I pitched this to KG, Kevin Gill. I mean, doesn't Joey Janela, X-Pac in the main event of a spring break? I mean, doesn't that feel right, Giancarlo?
It does. It does. It really does.
Yeah. I'm going to keep pitching until it happens. So.
Giancarlo, hey, are you, do you think, dude, eventually we're going to get to play in a
game. I kind of anticipated this being looser. Go ahead.
I hope we play the game because I've been studying up on drag queens all day today.
Are we playing another?
So we can get to it. We're not playing that one? Oh, okay.
No. Right.
Different game.
But hey, so are you going to be doing anything like Game Changer again?
Yeah. So like, you know, I was there.
That's how I originally knew. So we
met each other a long time ago when it was Jersey Championship Wrestling.
Yep.
And you know, you used to do the shows there at Game Changer World. And then eventually it became Game Changer Wrestling.
Yeah.
You know, Jersey Championship Wrestling is back. It's now like the kind of the developmental to Game Changer Wrestling.
Is Ricky really, O involved with it again?
No, Ricky O's no. He sold the rights over to Brett Lauderdale. So
Okay.
You know, and that's Brett's story. I'll let him tell that.
Yeah.
But yeah, man, there was a lot of shows this weekend. I was at three of them. And man, it felt really good. It felt really good that, you know, we kept saying like, I see the light at the end of the tunnel of this pandemic and, man, we're now seeing the light. We're here, you know, we're getting out of it and it feels really good. It feels really good.
So, hey, and it's Stephanie McMahon mentioned something I just briefly saw, like that their projection for like their live attendance stuff or the stuff they have coming up is looking really strong. And the only reason I bring that up is I can only imagine that same enthusiasm is industry-wide and not just WWE.
Sure, sure. Yeah, I mean, this weekend it was there was 800 people there, which is a very large crowd for these independent shows.
Yeah, man.
You know, usually they're drawing, 500, stuff like that. You know, during the pandemic, you can only fit maybe 100 people, 150 people.
Right.
Because of the capacity limits. But no, people want entertainment.
Yeah, and especially pro wrestling, right? Like,
yeah, I mean, with anything too. I mean, like, I went to the city last minute to go to a comedy show, and mm-hmm. man, it was like you had to show your vax card to get in, but packed room. It was like it felt really good. Yeah, Michael Shea was there, and he said, "Welcome back to civilization."
Michael Shea,
and everyone was like, "That was it, man. That's it."
Dude, and so like real quick before we get into the game here, I'll do my obligatory question. Like, dude, you're so beloved, Giancarlo. I cannot stress how I have never met a person that has said a bad word about you. When we found out that you were no longer with the company, I read things like people were surprised because they said Giancarlo is a genius, is the way that you were described.
I don't love that.
I'm
an Apple genius. Yeah.
I know Apple genius ones. They're doing very well. Yeah. No, it's the Apple genius people, but you have an eye and a mind for producing pro wrestling, unlike I think very few of this generation. So were you surprised that it didn't fit there for you, I guess, in the end?
Yeah, man. I mean, it wasn't just me. It was a lot of people. And, it was a decision that's made probably to benefit, business and stuff. So, I'm looking forward. I'm looking forward to what's next,
Cool. Yeah, man.
I've just been really positive. And, these past 2 weeks, people have just said some really beautiful things to me, And it's, you kind of can't be down about it when you hear these things.
No, man. And I mentioned this to somebody else. I'm pretty tight with that got released in the same time period as you.
Sure.
And I was like, I just said, hey man, I was pissed when I got fired, when I got let go, when Eric fired me by FedEx. I was pissed off about that. But I knew like once I got over that, like the feeling shitty about that, like,
mm-hmm.
And I got over it quick because I knew there was a lot waiting for me. Like I knew the opportunity, it was doing me a favor, honestly, but it still didn't feel good, So I can imagine like that might've been like, you might still have some of that. Like,
there was a lot of things I still wanted to do there, but hopefully I'll still be able to do them, now.
Oh, and trust
starting
me,
now,
dude,
right?
Hey, so. Oh, and trust me, that's not the last, unless you turn them down, they'll be calling you again.
Yeah.
Oh, they will.
I love this.
I'm always right about that shit.
Okay.
Yeah. No, I know. I mean, it's wrestling. Everything has to come full circle. That's just how it works, right? Yeah.
There's no one that I've told that to that didn't end up back in WWE.
Yeah. I believe it.
You got the monkey's paw right there. Okay. Let's jump. Hey, this is a game show segment. As much as I welcome the conversation with Giancarlo, who is beloved, and we all are hoping so we'll do well. Today's game is a retread. So I was talking to Giancarlo before. He wanted Attitude Era questions. Sean has really, I think, only ever won this game once. And so we're going to bring it back. On my desk, I keep this stack of about, 100 or so 1997 Titan Sports trivia cards. Okay. Each card has 5 questions on it. Now, I have read these questions pretty regularly. I don't think there's an order of difficulty from 1 to 5. I believe it to just be 5 random questions. Now, all of these questions are from 1997 or before. They only reference things from 97 or before. So to decide who's, we've had Giancarlo's taking the time to do this, play the game show. He's a patron. I think we should just let him go first, Sean. Unless
Absolutely.
Okay. All right. Wonderful.
I mean, thank you. But honestly, that little thing we do, like to decide, like, Like, that's always fun, too. Like, I can make another paper airplane, but I can let Giancarlo make it first, so he wins.
That's fine. I didn't think of a good prize. I was going to... Hey, do you want a scavenger hunt, Sean? Do you want a scavenger hunt to start it off here to see who goes first?
I mean, we can do
first
that.
I'm gonna put him over,
but
the first person to show me a writing utensil will get to go first. Oh, jeez. Giancarlo wins. He had a
there we go.
There it is.
I got.
What?
Oh, nice. Wow. Markers.
John,
I was at the CVS the other day. I was thinking about drawing. You know, doing some doodling. Let me get some markers.
Yeah, okay.
So I can doodle.
Sure. Sign us a t-shirt with your doodling, please. Yeah. Whole pack of markers, by the way, for those at home that couldn't see that. Out of nowhere, Sean brought onto the screen. Okay, so Giancarlo won. So, Sean, you're going to pick a number 1 through 5. I'm going to ask Giancarlo the question on the card that corresponds with the number. If he gets it right, he gets a point. So what number, 1 through 5?
3.
3. Okay.
Right in the middle.
All right. This goes to you, Giancarlo. At the 1990 yep. SummerSlam, who was the guest of Brother Love? Was it A, Hacksaw Jim Duggan, B, Sergeant Slaughter, or C, Rowdy Roddy Piper?
C?
The answer was no. I'm sorry. The answer was B, Sergeant Slaughter, yeah. The guest.
Yeah. I didn't know, like, if there wasn't multiple choice, I wouldn't have got that. But, yeah. Like, when you gave all the, like, I was like, oh, yeah, that was during the Sergeant Slaughter is the bat, you know, turned on turned on us.
Okay, got it. Wonderful. Okay, well, Giancarlo, you can pick a number now, 1 through 5, for me to ask Sean a question.
5.
Okay. You kind of gave him a layup here, I think, but we'll find out. Number 5. On the Pile Driver video album, who sang Jive Soul Brother or Jive Soul Bro? Come on, Sean. Who is it?
Oh, me?
It's on you.
Oh, Slick.
It's Slick. That's right. 1 point for Sean. Sean has got a victory there. That was way easier than Giancarlo's question.
Yeah, I did.
Yeah.
Way easier. All right.
You can ask me almost anything about that particular Pile Driver album. I'd probably get that.
It's a classic, man. To be fair, it's a banger, you know? So
I thought so.
All right. Anyway, back to Giancarlo here now. Sean, pick a number 1 through 5.
I'll go with 1.
Okay. Number 1. All right. Giancarlo. Oh, fuck. These are hard. Okay. Where did the May 1995 In Your House take place, which I'm sure Sean might have actually been on. Was it Louisville, Saginaw, or Syracuse?
I'm just going to go with Syracuse.
You guessed correctly, Jim.
There we go.
That was correct. 95
really?
Happened in Syracuse. Yeah.
Huh. So, I don't know why I was thinking Louisville.
Okay. The May. Do you think you were on the May 1995 In Your House, Sean?
I don't know. It could have been a tag match. I mean, I don't know. Was I?
I don't know. I don't have it in front of me. I was asking you. You're actually
like
you.
Sid and I versus Razor and Marty or something. I don't know.
We'll look it up. Anybody at home right now who's listening, Google it. You can tweet us. Okay. All right. Back to Sean here. Giancarlo, give me a number. You, by the way, tied 1 apiece right now. Pick a number 1 through 5, Giancarlo.
4.
4. Okay. There's no multiple choice here for this, Sean. You just need to tell me. Who faced Dino Bravo at WrestleMania 7?
Oh, shit, man.
No multiple choice. You just got to tell me who faced Dino Bravo at WrestleMania 7.
WrestleMania 7.
I know. Difficult. Got to take a shot. We're going to put the timer up here just a second. By the way, Giancarlo, you may want to think. If you know it, keep it to yourself. I'll give you a chance to steal here just a second.
I can't even think of who he was.
I'm gonna give you a 3.
Yeah, no, I can't. I got nothing.
He's tapping out. Giancarlo, do you want to take a guess?
I don't know. But.
Okay. Wow, you guys, that was the Texas Tornado faced Dino Bravo at WrestleMania 7. I know. Von Erich reference. Okay. Man, I told you this is not. This was a children's game in '97. Do you know the town of May '95 in your house? All right. Anyway, back to Giancarlo. Sean, you guys are still tied one apiece, one through five. Give me a question number. Which one do you want, Sean?
Me?
Yeah, pick one through five.
Give me three.
Three. Okay. Giancarlo, at the 1990 SummerSlam, Nikolai Volkoff and Jim Duggan faced either A, Power and Glory, B, Beverly Brothers, or C, the Orient Express.
Man, you know, I...
Oh, man, just blowing y'all's minds here right now.
Yeah, yeah, I'm exposed right now. I don't know. I'm terrible at wrestling trivia. What were the options again?
Power and Glory.
Yeah.
Beverly Brothers, or the Orient Express.
I'm going to go with A.
A, that is not correct. But yeah. Sean, I'll give you a chance to steal. Do you think it was the Beverly Brothers or the Orient Express?
It would have been the Orient Express.
It was, in fact, the Orient Express. That put Sean up 2-1.
Beverly Brothers weren't there yet, I don't think.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. Well, the process of elimination. All right. Well, Giancarlo, I'm going to let you pick 1 through 5. If Sean gets this right, he'll be up 3-1. And I think we can safely declare him the winner here.
Yeah. Yeah.
We'll see. Pick a number 1 through 5, Giancarlo.
1.
All right. At the October 95 in your house, Sean, who was Mabel's opponent? Was it Yokozuna, Bam Bam Bigelow, or Diesel?
In your house?
October 1995 in your house.
I'm going to say probably Bam Bam.
That is not correct. Giancarlo, Yokozuna.
I'm going to have to say it's Diesel.
Wow, guys. No, it was Yokozuna.
What?
Yeah, no. Like, I know it wasn't Kev because Kev worked with him at SummerSlam, Mabel. Okay. And after that, he was never going to work with him again.
Okay.
Wow. Remember, he dropped on Kev's back and fucked his back up?
That is correct.
After all right.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll do one more here. Let's go to who just – it was Sean there. So, Sean, pick a number 1 through 5 for Giancarlo. Two. Okay.
Yeah.
Giancarlo, at the 94 Survivor Series, the defending WWE champion was who? 94 Survivor Series defending WWE champion. Was it Bret Hart, Diesel, or Yokozuna? 1994 Survivor Series. Defending champion, Bret Hart, Diesel.
Sean, do you know?
I'm
Don't say it, but I'm going to go with Bret Hart.
It was Bret Hart. So that ties it up. All right.
Is that the one we had at the Cap Center in Washington or Landover, Maryland or something?
I know as much as is on the card, which is Bret was the champion. So I don't appreciate being questioned and making myself look like a fool. All right, wonderful. Next question. Giancarlo, 1 through 5, pick a name. Pick a number.
We'll do 3 this time.
All right. At the 1990 SummerSlam, who won the IC title? Was it Texas Tornado, British Bulldog, or Bret Hart? Sean, I knew this one.
Oh, 1990.
Many
1990 questions.
Yeah, 1990.
Who won? That's tough because I think it was Bret.
It was not Bret. Giancarlo, I'll give you a chance here to choose either British Bulldog or Texas Tornado. If you get this right, 3-2, I will tell you the winner. Who won the ice?
I'm going to go with Texas Tornado.
You're correct, Giancarlo. Oh. You have won, and you there we have- go. Stopped Sean Waltman in his tracks down 2-1, came back to win 3-2 in Titan Sports Trivia. A wonderful achievement. Congratulations, Giancarlo.
Wow. Thank you. Thank you.
Someday this will be the basis of a documentary that you make. Will be just this we had and everything.
This is bullshit, dude.
This is bullshit. Because you lived through this period and worked through this should be layups for you, I feel like. You know,
okay,
that's the bullshit. Anyway,
I think it was rigged pretty much.
It wasn't, it was not rigged.
Did you let me win?
No, hell no. What
no, dude.
No,
Kevin Gill lost, right?
All these mail in votes.
Yeah, he won or lost, Kevin Gill.
I think Kevin Gill was the only, I think he lost. I think that's the only one who lost to you. I think that you won that one, Sean.
Dude, I'm not doing good on these, Giancarlo.
yeah,
dude, you're like, I mean. Everyone beats me.
Well, these are tricky, you know. These are tricky. 1997,
and I would be lying if I said I lose on purpose. Like, yeah. I actually do put up a fight on these. I don't just like put everyone over. Like I'm not just doing the job.
So. Giancarlo, where can people go to find you, follow you, support you, all those great things right now?
My Twitter is at yeah Giancarlo, like YEAHGIANCARLO. I'm usually there. That's about it. My Instagram, I post a photo like every couple of months. So
hey, so Giancarlo.
Yeah.
I talked about this a little bit, you know, about in a couple matches. We were talking about it. There's a really good chance like that, like the first match I do, I'm just going to promote myself. I might maybe promote my own event. Like, so
okay.
I would love to have you involved with anything
of
I
course.
Do.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? Let's do it. Let's do it. Yeah, let's keep in touch.
I'm a big fan of yours, dude.
I'm a massive fan of yours. So, you know, when I first got into wrestling, you were the guy, you know, when we were on the trampoline, we were doing, you know, your spinning kick and stuff, man. You know, so man, yeah, we wanted to be you. So, it'd be so cool to work with you and, you know, and to do this, this chapter, you know, of your career. So,
well, thank you, bro. Hey man, have an awesome day, Giancarlo.
Cheers, guys.
Thank you, Giancarlo. Take care, brother. Appreciate it.
That's it for this edition of Pro Wrestling for Life, everyone. I just want to thank Tom Campbell from Cultaholic, Giancarlo Didimo from... What the fuck is he
from? From heaven. From heaven, he came down and visited us here. Yes, GTW. You don't really have a home right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, I mean, it's you know? Just... It, wherever you... Like, I'm pretty sure you can, you know... Go a lot of places if he wants to.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Anyways, yeah. Yeah. So thank you to Giancarlo and Tom Campbell. And thank you to a longtime buddy, Jimmy Corderas, for joining us today. And Marsh, thank you for dropping by over on Patreon.
Yeah.
So, yeah, man.
Yeah. That's it. We've got nothing more this week at Pro Wrest for Life over on Twitter. We're also on Instagram as well. Just go follow us, support us. You guys are doing a great job of that anyway. Patreon. T-shirts, it's all there. We're constantly expanding, and the newsletter. Sign up for the newsletter. It goes out every Monday. So that's all I got. I'm at Nick Hausman over on Twitter. Thank you.
Thank you, everybody. See you next week.
Bye, guys.